Well, hey, Sean. Hey, Laurel.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
So, I couldn't help but noticing that we're not in the same room right now.
You couldn't help noticing?
I couldn't help but notice that obvious. Either, John.
I couldn't help but noticing.
Yeah,
you guys
I looked
have just
around
been
and you were not here.
To images on my screen, and I'm in my own room.
It's true. It's true. Like, that's our lives now because, like many of you listening, we have been working from home this week. We are part of this giant society-wide social distancing effort to slow the spread of the new coronavirus.
That's right. We have been covering roughly 10,000 news stories this week about state government and federal government and the coronavirus, though. So we've been, you know, keeping busy in our separate little places of the world.
Well, 10,000 stories, that seems like something that we can get to pretty succinctly in a, you know, roughly 20 to 30 minute podcast.
No problem.
All right, let's do it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, we talk about 10,000 things, give or take, and the new coronavirus in Wisconsin and the world. Where do we want to even start? Where do we even start with this week?
Well, I mean, it is sort of weird to just be talking to you from a distance. We're in our pajamas, and...
Wait, am I the only one actually in my pajamas? Are you guys actually in your pajamas as well?
I don't really have pajamas per se, but I have some very well-used sweatpants, which I washed today. Thank you very much.
I'm wearing boy clothes.
Aw, John got dressed for the podcast. Thanks, John. My sweatpants are my pajamas, so.
Yeah. Can I just throw out a precautionary note here that if we get punchy at some point during this podcast, obviously the news this week has been horrible for so many people, and we feel for them, but we haven't really done this in a while, and we have just been kind of working all week, and so I think we're maybe blowing off a little steam here in the podcast. If that happens, just know that that's the place from which it comes.
Absolutely. I mean, seeing these two guys' faces over my phone, I think, does this count as like seeing other humans other than my husband this week? Because if so, you are like persons like 3 and 4 that I've seen for like 6
days. Oh, wow.
Wow. So, yeah, that'll make you a little crazy.
I've seen my kids. They are handling it pretty well, but I think it's sinking in that this is going to be a while. So it's weird for us like it is for the rest of you.
So I guess
go ahead, John, sorry.
No, I was going to say, like, the big sort of overarching story here is sort of the Wisconsin government's response to coronavirus. That falls within our wheelhouse, right?
It does, because it was ordered by, well, technically by the Department of Health Services under the direction of Governor Tony Evers. Remember when we told you all about these broad powers that the governor had under the Department of Health Services, the degree that the governor has been able to kind of handle this thing through that agency, which is given that power under state law, has been pretty eye-opening. So early in the week, he directed the DHS to ban gatherings of 50 or more people. And like a day later, he banned gatherings of 10 or more people and ordered bars and restaurants closed, aside from takeout and delivery service, and ordered schools closed statewide indefinitely. How do we even, like, talk about anything else? I mean, the governor ordered all of that stuff this week, and everyone's lives are different now. There are places that are closing their doors, possibly permanently, because of everything that's happening. And there are, you know, and there are people who are becoming sick with COVID-19, and we've had our first deaths from COVID-19 this week.
I
need to stop talking. It just kind of keeps going. It's amazing everything that's happening.
So I guess, you know, aside from the governor issuing and DHS, you know, doing its stuff this week, which has obviously been huge, we've been keeping a really close eye on what the legislature might be doing in terms of, like, passing some new laws or amending existing laws and how that could be helpful during the outbreak. We talked to, I talked to Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald this week about the possibility of having an extraordinary session to take up some of those things. He said that leaders and the governor are meeting every day to talk about this stuff, which is pretty remarkable, right? Because they have had pretty high profile clashes about not meeting very much since Evers took office, right?
All it takes is a pandemic to bring them together.
I guess so. I'm still struck on kind of a daily basis at some of these partnerships that have sprung up. I mean, Governor Evers was on a conference call the other day that was organized by Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, and they were praising his leadership. You know, they are kind of the counterweight to Tony Evers in this state in a way. And on this call, they were all on the same page. I mean, very complimentary of him, and he was very open to their questions. That's the world we live in this moment. You know, check back in a few weeks, and I don't know what the world's going to look like if we're still podcasting in the future. I hope so. But I'm struck by it pretty regularly how different things are.
You mentioned the legislature. There was one news story that came out at some point earlier in the week about how the Senate had a session day scheduled and they went ahead and canceled that, right?
Yeah, so they were supposed to meet next week to have what was expected to be their final day of 2020. And they went ahead and postponed that over concerns about getting, you know, all 33 senators and their staff members and all the other staff required to run a floor session for the Senate, all in the Capitol at this time. So obviously some members of the Senate are in an age bracket where they have higher risk for COVID-19. Whoops, that's my computer.
Laurel, pull it together.
Yep.
In what our very professional mistake. Broadcast studio situation.
I'm sorry.
So that Senate day is not happening, or at least not for now.
Right. Well, what I think is really interesting is they've actually been talking about having a virtual session. So I've been reporting this a little bit this week in between the 10 million other things that are... Did I say 10,000 earlier? Maybe it's 10,000, 10 million.
We got time for 10 million.
It's a multiple of 10. Yeah. But the possibility of a virtual session, and there actually is a state statute that allows the legislature to get together in times of disaster or emergency by whatever means they can. So that's being explored a little bit. So we could potentially see the Senate get together virtually to have that last day of, you know, voting in 2020 that they were supposed to have next week. You know, it was supposed to happen next week. I'm not saying the virtual session is going to happen next week. Or they could use that to get together in an extraordinary session to take up some, like, you know, COVID-19 specific bills.
And as of last week when we talked about this, we had some comments from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss saying that he didn't think at the time that any additional time in session was needed to address the coronavirus. Has that changed at all?
Well, I honestly haven't heard as much from Speaker Voss this week. I've reached out to his office a few times, haven't gotten responses back. Senator Fitzgerald has been a lot more open about talking about, like, the meetings with the governor and such. Speaker Voss did put out a statement about the meetings with the governor. It was a joint statement with Fitzgerald. What we do know is that original kind of framing of it from Voss was they didn't see the need because the governor could do things with his emergency powers. Joint Finance could meet as a committee, aside from, you know, not needing the full legislature to get together to release some funds. Senator Fitzgerald did acknowledge when I chatted with him, you know, the governor can do a lot. And so what they're kind of trying to figure out right now is they have those daily meetings is what can the governor do, what can the governor not do that would require the legislature to act, and what are some things that state agencies might need that only the legislature could do for them. So they're in this kind of like discovering and sifting and winnowing process to figure out what legislative action might need to happen, if any.
I think one thing that is worth keeping an eye on is what the legislature and governor decide to do with unemployment insurance changes, because this week,
I was going to bring that up.
As we record this podcast, through Thursday, we've had almost 46,000 new unemployment claims in Wisconsin in just those days. There were like 15,000 on Wednesday alone. That was the day after the governor ordered restaurants and bars closed to everything but takeout and delivery. And, you know, I can tell you from talking to some workers and some businesses who were affected by those changes that day, they were just heartbroken. And now they are going to be just relying on this state unemployment system in masses all at once. And the unemployment fund has about $2 billion in it right now, but we haven't been through something like this before exactly. So it sounds like a lot of money is what the Department of Workforce Development said this week. And it is, but we got to keep an eye on this because this is all new.
And there is some stuff that would have to be done potentially through legislation related to unemployment insurance, right? I mean, the governor has taken a couple things away with his executive power in this state of emergency. He's taken away like work search requirements that you have to do to be eligible for unemployment. But he has called on the legislature to act to repeal this 1 week waiting period for benefits that's written into law. So that would be something that lawmakers would actually have to do.
And then I think the federal level is another really big story in all of this. So they've already passed a couple bills related to the coronavirus. One was nearly unanimous in Congress. This was like $8 billion in emergency funding that happened earlier this month. That went forward. The second, though, coronavirus bill that passed this week was, and I just talked about how everybody is bipartisan now and getting along and agreeing on everything. But in Wisconsin's House delegation, the second bill was actually along partisan lines. It was along party lines. All Republicans were against it, you know, even though this was an effort that was pushed by President Donald Trump, and all the Democrats were for it. And I think the real hang up on that one is that this new federal law includes paid family leave provisions that Democrats have wanted for a long time. And Republicans, especially Ron Johnson, have said are going to severely damage small businesses. They won't be able to pay for it. And so they'll just let people go.
And there's another piece of federal legislation working its way through the process now, too. Right. So, I mean, this is like a dynamic that will potentially continue to see play out or maybe evolve over time in terms of like how the Wisconsin delegation agrees or disagrees on this stuff.
Yeah, this third one is going to be really big. You've probably heard the number $1 trillion. That's what the Trump administration is looking at potentially in this one, which would be like an economic stimulus bill different than the stimulus that passed under President Obama to try to pull the country out of the Great Recession. But this, the same idea that the system's kind of broken right now. And so they want to pump a bunch of money into the system, but there's going to be sharp disagreements over how best to do that.
And while we're talking about Congress and Wisconsin's delegation, you mentioned Ron Johnson about how he voted, but specifically he's also been out there making comments this week about coronavirus and the stuff that's going on.
Yeah, so this kind of started in a March 12th New York Times article when Johnson said that media hadn't given enough coverage to all the survivors of COVID-19. And then he really expanded on that in a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article this week. This was with Craig Gilbert, where he said that he wasn't denying that COVID-19 could, quote, obviously be devastating to somewhere between 1 and 3.4% of the population, quote, But that means 97 or 99% will get through this and develop immunities and will be able to move beyond this. But we don't shut down our economy because tens of thousands of people die on the highways. It's a risk we accept so we can move about. Johnson added that getting the coronavirus, quote, is not a death sentence except for maybe no more than 3.4% of our population, and I think probably far less. So to just put that in perspective, I mean, if you're talking about 3.4% of the United States population, that would be 11.2 million people. 1% would be about 3.3 million people. So that got attention this week from Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is kind of the leading public health expert who has the president's ear now, maybe not early, but now in terms of the coronavirus response. He took issue with Ron Johnson's comments and said that's totally way out. And he said, when you have something that's new and it's emerging and you really can't predict totally the impact it's going to have, and you take a look at what's going on in China and you see what's going on right now in Italy, what's happening in New York City, I don't think with any moral conscience you could say, why don't we just let it rip and happen and let X percent of the people die? So Ron Johnson is right in the thick of this national discussion here and getting some attention from people who are making the decisions up top.
So shifting gears here a little bit, another uniquely Wisconsin story that we've been looking at is that there is an election coming up here. That's a story, whether or not there is going to be that election.
Yeah, I mean, I almost don't even know where to start. I mean, the State Elections Commission has had an emergency meeting to talk about what some of the challenges clerks across the state are facing in terms of, you know, implementing early voting and their concerns about Election Day. Some of those challenges include polling places moving, places being shut down that had been used for early voting, places like libraries, a potential shortage of poll workers in Wisconsin. We know poll workers are often older folks volunteering. They're at a high risk for COVID-19. So how is, you know, the sort of collective election apparatus in Wisconsin going to replace those folks to work on Election Day? And then some like kind of practical things that you wouldn't even necessarily think about overlapping with elections super much, but just like, you know, a shortage of hand sanitizer. Clerks haven't been able to get their hands on that and cleaning supplies that they need to make sure that early voting locations are as clean as they would like them to be and need them to be right now, and to have those for Election Day. So it's really just kind of running the whole gamut in terms of what election officials are trying to figure out right now. I haven't even gotten into the fact that there's just been an unprecedented surge of requests for mail-in ballots, something that has never happened in Wisconsin, that spurred a shortage of envelopes that clerks use to mail these out and have the return envelope in the mailing so people can obviously send their ballots back. They were about 600,000 envelopes short for what they needed, according to the Elections Commission. And there was actually a shortage as well of the security material, like the paper, the security paper that they need to make those envelopes. So since that news came out, the Elections Commission has said that they have figured it out and they've got a million envelopes that they're sending out. So that problem has been averted. But I never really imagined I'd be covering an envelope shortage at any
no,
point.
An envelope and hand sanitizer shortage. It makes the, it just puts into perspective how voting is such a human exercise. I don't know. And that like a dirty polling place could fester deadly germs at an election.
Right. And how big some of these polling places are. I was on a press call this morning with three mayors from Northeast Wisconsin who were actually pushing for the election to be postponed. And one of them pointed out that a lot of polling places in his community are small enough that it's pretty much impossible to have the 6 feet of social distancing that you're supposed to have if people were to go to this location to cast their ballots. And then he said in other places they have more than 10 poll workers, just workers, that are generally there. So how do you, follow the guidance of not more than 10 people when you're, you know, having a gathering like that? You know, obviously election sites will be exempt from these orders, but that doesn't take away the concern from people who say, well, if this is something that should be applied in all the other facets of our life, why should it not be applied on election day?
And so we've seen some other states go ahead and like take the step of moving elections, saying we're not going to do this when we thought we were. As of now, the governor is still saying we're going to try to... hold on, Sean's door is getting knocked on.
Who is it? Come in. Hey, I'm recording a podcast with John and Laurel. Do you want to say hi? You can say hi. It's okay. Come here.
Yeah, come say hi.
Everybody, this is Meredith, my 6-year-old daughter. Say hi, Meredith.
Hey, Meredith.
You want to say something into the microphone?
Hello.
All right. Meredith seems a little surprised. I don't think she knew that I was recording in here. So you're okay. Yeah, I think she was a little nervous. She just ran down the hallway. So,
Jeff.
Okay, where were we?
Other states moved elections, and as of now, the governor has said that Wisconsin is looking not to do that. But we still don't really know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, so the governor actually said today that he doesn't believe he has the authority to move the election date. There's been a lot of kind of back and forth. Different people have different ideas about what the governor's emergency powers would allow him to do. Some people think he could do that. Other people think that it would have to be something that the legislature would do or that courts would do, because this election date is actually written into state law. So, regardless of whether or not the governor has the power to do so, he said he's not in favor of it. He thinks that postponing it now doesn't really remove some of the problems, because he said today, okay, what if we push it until June? Well, the situation could be worse in June. He's also raised some concerns about a lot of the local offices that are on the ballot on April 7th, things like county executive races, mayoral races, and what the effect would be of those positions not being filled, because oftentimes people take office pretty shortly after the election. And he said the democratic process needs to go forward. Things need to continue moving as they should. So unless the legislature or court step in, it's looking pretty unlikely that the election is going to change from April 7th. I think it's also really important to note that a lot of people have already voted. I mean, I mentioned this before. There's been a record number of absentee ballot requests, those mail-in ballots, and people are going in every day to vote early in person as well.
Yeah, I've been struck by just how much Evers has been really forceful on this election date, because he's been asked about it repeatedly, about whether this is a mixed message. We're telling people not to go out in groups and to socialize, and then we have this election and people are going to either have to go out and be in these unsafe conditions, or else it's kind of voter suppression, right? But Evers is saying, like, very, very forcefully, like, look, this election is happening. If we delay it till June, can you tell me it's going to be better in June? He's saying firmly this is happening. And then he has allies out there who are saying this is a bad idea, you know? The mayor of Green Bay, Eric Genrich, is a former Democratic lawmaker, a supporter of Governor Evers. He is very much out there front and center. He was one of those mayors you talked about, Laurel, saying this can't happen. Dean Coffert, one of the other mayors, a former Republican lawmaker, saying this can't happen. Gordon Hintz has been saying this is a bad idea. I've seen Republican consultants, Brian Fraley, out there very early saying this is a bad idea. So I think this is one where the party doesn't seem to matter in the same way that it usually does when it comes to what people think about whether we should have this election.
Yeah, I think it's important to note, too, though, that Senator Fitzgerald seems to be on Governor Evers' side on this as well. Yeah, he has said that he doesn't see any reason for the election to be postponed and believes that it should go forward. So, again, some potentially unlikely bedfellows. Is that what you call them?
That's
unlikely
it.
Alliances, allegiances. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
One thing you mentioned earlier is the possibility of the courts stepping in about this election situation, and we've had some legal action going on this week that you did some coverage of.
Yeah, so the state Democratic Party and the Democratic National Committee filed a lawsuit this week about Wisconsin voting laws that basically said if the election is going to go forward and happen on April 7th, some of our laws need to be changed to make sure that it's easier for some folks to vote. What they want to do is extend some deadlines. They wanted to extend the deadline for online voter registration. That deadline actually passed this week. It was on Wednesday. So under their proposal, that would open back up. They want to change the deadline for receiving an absentee ballot. So when a clerk actually gets that filled out ballot back, right now it has to be received by 8 p.m. on election day. They want it to be 10 days after Election Day, as long as it was postmarked on the day of the election. They also want to lift Wisconsin's voter ID law, essentially, as it pertains to mail-in ballots. They want to make it so people don't have to include a copy of their ID with their absentee ballot request. Right now, if you register online and ask for that ballot or submit that request, rather, online for the ballot, you have to upload a picture of like your driver's license or your passport to get it. If you do it by mail, you have to include a photocopy. They say that's going to be too difficult for some people, that they're not going to be able to leave their house to make a copy that they need or to get the documents that they need. So basically, that would be one way that the courts would step in. If the federal court, which has taken briefing documents on that this week, it's moving pretty quickly, would be able to step in and say, okay, this is how Wisconsin's election is going to change in terms of implementation right now.
Hey, a quick update on that one. This happened Friday night after we recorded the podcast. Federal Judge William Conley issued an order that gave Democrats a partial victory in that case. He extended the deadline for online voter registration until March 30th. He did not grant the other Democratic requests in that case, at least for now. So the deadline for online voter registration has been extended to March 30th. Okay, back to the podcast.
Before we wrap up, not to get too, like, navel-gazy here, I know we usually stick to the news and the issues, but how are you guys doing? How has it been this week? I mean, I know for me it's been just editing the news. It has been nonstop and really weird.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I try to keep it in perspective, and, you know, I'm not a healthcare worker who potentially has to deal with an overload of the healthcare system if all these COVID-19 patients kind of come at once. So I'm not a service employee who just overnight saw my industry just kind of disappear in Wisconsin, at least hopefully temporarily. So I try to keep it in perspective. All that said, it's been a weird week, as I'm sure it has for all of you out there. Just it's sort of strange to experience all this, and you know, it kind of feels like everything that we've experienced until now is sort of pales in comparison, and that this will affect everything that comes after it. You know, that's just how big it feels right now, and I guess I also wonder. Let's say we do this for a few weeks, and we flatten the curve, as everybody's been saying. What happens if we go back out in the world and you know, cases start to spike again. Is this our 2020 and beyond? I don't know.
Yeah, it's really crazy because you think about like the DNC in July, and that was going to be such a huge part of our year. It felt like something that we were really building up to all the time. And now it's, you're wondering, is that even going to happen? It feels sort of like topsy-turvy, you know, kind of like you're living in an alternate reality or something. And I think it's also just nutty. I mean, you kind of mentioned this, John, but like just the constant onslaught of news this week. I feel like I sit down at my kitchen table in the morning and it's almost like I'm getting on a treadmill that's moving a little bit too fast for me.
That's a good way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's
a mix between that and then somebody's pointing a fire hose at you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I am working on something and then something else happens or something else happens, and it's really impossible to feel like you're caught up at any point. Things are changing so fast and so much is going on.
Well, I guess it's helpful at least to be able to sit down and talk with you guys a little bit and sort through it. And hopefully to listeners out there, it's helpful somewhat too. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
With all of this craziness going on and all of this news seemingly coming out nonstop, we can't promise that things will be as regular and as on time as normal, but we will do our best to get new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast out there almost every single week. You can subscribe to get them on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. And if you're looking for something to do while social distancing, you can listen to all of our past episodes anytime you want by going to wpr.org/politics.